Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Man's Voice. I would like to say happy Passover to those who understand that. I know that I was saying it should be blessed Passover, but there are others on this panel of mine who send me messages showing that I could say happy Passover too. So those of you that are religious and happy Passover to you. I know that it was supposed to have been one of the other gentlemen on today, but he is not able to do it. Spencer is not able to do it. I would like to say hello to Soel out in Las Vegas. Glad you joined us, sir.
Nice to be here.
Oh, good. All right. You know, one of the things I would like to start off with is for those of us who have gone through civil rights and that piece, kind of in the back of our minds, we have put down that race nation, is something that is behind us, that we are not by any means going to be in that era again. And then lately, especially in Georgia, and especially around the United States, it seems that race is becoming a major issue. Now, this one thought had been imposed to me by one of the panel members. Michael has been saying that to me, and I've been saying, well, no, we did all that back in the day, that now it has to get better. But as every day passes, it seems to me that race is becoming a major issue again, at the point where I don't know where it's going, but it doesn't seem to be going down a great path. And so Asian Americans are now complaining about being discriminated against. And, one of the things, especially in Georgia, there seems to be so many things going on in Georgia, especially with when the government is starting to take sides. The governor of Georgia was signing a voters registration bill, and there was a state representative, Park Cannon, who was knocking on his door trying to be part of that signing ceremony, and she was arrested and taken to jail. And according to the state attorney, that could carry a 5-year arrest. But the president of the United States said that bill was like a Jim Crow bill law. Why would you go back in time and pass a bill like that? Bill, I was trying to tell you that the bill itself was, you couldn't give water or food to anybody standing in line. The state representatives could take over the voting sites in their districts. So it was really considered to be a bill that was not for minorities. So my whole conversation today to start out with is, it looks like we as men are going to have to realize and recognize that race is becoming a major issue in the United States again. I think for those of us who went through the civil rights, we didn't see it. But right now it's staring us in the face. And if we don't stare it back and try to fix it, we're going to be in a big civil war, I think. So I'd like to ask Bruce, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, thank you, David, and also for others out there, happy Palm Sunday as well, those Christians out there. So to answer your question, David, the biggest culprits, although they're not the only ones, but the biggest culprits in dividing with race is the far left. You know, I always emphasize that I don't mean the good people of the left, the smart intelligent people of the left that want to think for themselves and make their own decisions, but the far radical left will not let race die. It's constantly there. Everything's focused around it, and they use it because every time they do, or it seems like most of the time when they do, it divides people. You're not going to get people to come together if they constantly do that. So my big question, part of that, my answer is, why do they want to keep doing that? I have my own theory on that, but that's wrong. And the Republicans are not blameless, but the Democrats and the press that support anything they say or most of what they say are constantly bringing that up, fanning that fire, building that flame, and we're not going to be able to even start to come together unless we set that down. And it's becoming so diluted a phrase that the real meaning of racism, which is a heinous thing, a bad thing, is being, diluted. The old adage of keep trying calling wolf, eventually nobody believes you or it doesn't mean anything anymore. So that's one of the biggest moves that we have to do and then come together and have a common issues that the two of them might have different opinions on, but at least they feel they can come together on and start with something simple like infrastructure, just infrastructure, nothing else. We both know they want that. So start with that. Get that solved, and then you'll at least have one thing under your belt that you solved together. I mean, we got to start with small steps and grow into mature adults again to be able to make these decisions.
But there you go again, saying the far left, when in actuality, in my mind, who was it that was complaining about voter registration when he was in office? Who was it that just signed this bill that caused the president of the United States to say that legislature is no more than Jim Crow laws way going back? So if you're saying that we're the ones that keep talking about it, why is it that the right keeps putting up issues that make us talk about it? You want to jump in on that, Don?
Yes, I do. First of all, thank you, and welcome and a celebration time for Palm Sunday. The far left is responding to the far right and middle right for pacifying the far right. It's a totally ridiculous. President Biden said it eloquently in his last statement. I can't believe this. I can't believe here we are going back to Jim Crow tactics. If you're standing in line, you can't get any water. You can't have souls to the polls anymore. I mean, come on. You know, it's not about infrastructure or stimulus economics. It's about racism. Racism. You know, and what gets me is in the United States, we never rectified racism. It's been going on for 400 years, and we never rectified it. In Caribbean countries and other countries across the world, it's about not racism, but socialism. And also, it's about economics and other issues. But we got a strong situation here in the United States, and we got to come out of denial. It seems like we're in denial. It's in our face, and we don't want to look at it. That's why God allowed the pandemic to hit 2020, so we could have clear vision. And the thing is, denial, D-E-N-I-A-L, don't even know I am lying. That's the meaning, don't even know I am lying. It's in our face. Racism is here. We got to deal with this. This is a serious issue. And a man's voice is so dominant right now, we've got to talk about it, because men that have gone through the civil rights actions and affirmative action, and up to now, we've seen it. We lived it. So we're going to talk about it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Don, except the fact that I would probably reverse the roles on it. But everything you said is true. I agree with that. We're probably just looking at it from the opposite angles, opposite sides.
Well, you know, one thing about it, Bruce, you got to be able to live it. We lived it. And it's a difference when you live
it. I'll grant you that, yes. I'll grant you I cannot have the perspective that you have had, but I'll say one quick thing and then hush up. Talking about it doesn't solve anything. Doing about it, we have to do things to stem that tide, to lower that temperature, to calm that situation. Talking raises the volume, the heat, the confusion, the angst, and the separation. Talking, we've done way too much talking and not enough action.
If you don't talk about it, how are you going to plan? If you don't plan, how are you going to be successful? Ron, what are your thoughts? Let me say this. Ron has a new iPhone, so he's having a lot of issues with it. Ron, you're breaking up.
$12 on
you're breaking up really bad, Ron.
Tell him to use his old phone.
No, that's a new iPhone.
Well, I got a brand new iPhone, Bruce.
Uh-oh.
Let me try again, Ron.
Let me tell the world out there, do not upgrade to the new iPhone 12. I have to go outside of my house to talk on the phone. Apple,
but
I welcome your calls.
You're good and clear now.
Yeah, because I had to go outside my house. Ridiculous. My perspective is pessimistic. I'll say that from the get-go. I know that this is a racist country. I don't think there's any denying that. We're all racist, some of us more than others. There's some degree of racism in every single one of us, black, white, Chinese, straight, gay, whatever. And I think I call it the Trump effect, actually. And I'll explain what I mean. When President Obama was in office, there were issues, you know, I'm not going to deny that, but things seemed to escalate when Trump became president. And I think I'm not, you know, this is just my guess, but this is what I believe. It was his rhetoric. It was the things that he said that kind of gave the green card to those people that, on the far right that were hiding in the shadows to all of a sudden come out and, you know, say, here I am. This is my country. Get the F out of here, basically. To the people that did not look like them and did not act like them or look like them. And I think that's what it is. I mean, I think, and then you throw in there all of the things that have been going on, all of the shootings, the police shootings, you know, even down here locally, what went on in South Beach and with the curfew and they brought out the tanks, when there's spring break going on in lots of other places in the country. And that hasn't taken the same route. But the reason, or, you know, at least a lot of the people here are saying it's because a lot of the spring breakers in Miami are African-American. So
that's
the difference. So I call it the Trump effect, and that's my theory.
All right.
I don't think talking about it is going to solve it either. I mean, I honestly don't think there's really much of a solution here. I mean, we just, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I wish that there was a solution, but, you know, we've talked about reparations before, and some of us were against it, some of us were for it. I mean, so where do you even start?
All right. So one of the panelists have been telling us this from the time he's gotten on the panel, and I want to get his thoughts. Michael, what are your thoughts on the conversation we're having?
Okay, thank you, David, for coming to me, and hi, everybody. It's good to hear all of you. Yeah, I've always said that. You're right. We've been doing this show for 3 years now, and I've always said that America was built on racism, and America's going to die by racism. I've always said that. And everyone on this telephone can agree right now, America, the wheels are coming off of this country. This democracy is falling apart, and it's because of racism. That's the underlying reason. Now, I'm going to tell you where I think it started, David. I think it started when Barack Obama got elected in 2008. I think that's when the wheels started coming off, because prior to that, it was understood in America that the white man was the ruler, he was the king, he had all the power. Martin Luther King and those guys in the Civil Rights Movement, they tried to fight against racism. Obviously, that's documented. They pushed back against racism very effectively. But they were all killed and assassinated. Dr. King, Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, we can go down the list of the leaders of that organization that were either put in prison or assassinated. So therefore, that just validated in every black person in America and white person's mind that, yes, this is the white man's country. No matter how hard you march and push back Martin Luther King, this is the white man's country. So the generation, the baby boomer generation, I think, David, your generation just looked at it as, hey, that's just how it is. Let's just go with it. So fast forward to Barack Obama getting elected, I think a lot of the country, the racism that was there, woke up and said, oh, wait a minute, the white man's not in power anymore. Oh, no, we cannot have that. And ever since then, this country has just been busting apart over racism. Ever since Barack Obama, we've gotten Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Black Lives Matter, the Proud Boys. All this stuff has stemmed because when Barack Obama was in office for 8 years, a large portion of the country was driven crazy by the fact that there was a black family in that White House. And just real quick, I'm going to end it with this one. I just want to explain to the millennial generation what Jim Crow is, because you hear that a lot, just throwing that out, saying, hey, this is the new Jim Crow. Jim Crow was a time in America when black people had to sit on the back of the bus. Black people couldn't drink at the same water fountain as white people. Black men were being lynched. Black women were being raped repeatedly. During the Jim Crow era, white police officers would go to churches on Sundays, apprehend black church-going women, take them in the woods and rape them, and they never were held accountable for that. That went on in the Jim Crow South for 100 years. So when you hear the word Jim Crow, understand that's a very powerful word. That's just not a word you just need to brush over. And, yes, that's what we're seeing right now in America is a redux of Jim Crow, to quote Barack Obama. I cede the floor.
All right. We're going to go to Soel, and after Soel, I'll come back to Darius. But Soel, what are your thoughts on what we're talking about?
Well, when it comes to the election law that was passed in Georgia, I don't know that much about it because I don't live in Georgia, and I don't go into deep talks about that with my family when I call them or visit them. But there was something about, like, as you were talking about, not being able to pass food or water. And that was from candidates or direct party groups to the Republican Party, Democratic Party. If Brian Kemp wanted to pass out water or Stacey Abrams wanted to pass out water, it would be a conflict of interest versus non-affiliated political action groups. I can understand that, but still, it's like a basic need of water or food, so I can't understand why people are upset about it. And when it comes to race divisions in America, I've always had this philosophy. The greatest way to defeat racism is to simply stop talking about it. Like, is it there? Yes. And are there people that are racist in America? Yes. But stop calling me a black man. Call me by my name. That's who I am. And when I tell my friends, like, you don't call me a black man. My name is Sewell Thompson. You call me by my name. And that is just what we need to start doing, is addressing us by the basis of who we are, not our cultural identities. Our cultural and individual identities need to be separate. When you see on a newspaper, black man robs a store, shot and killed by white police officer, it shouldn't be that. It should be man robbed a store, shot by a police officer. And that's how it needs to be progressing forward.
Well,
Real quick, I got to push back on that. You're saying the answer is to not talk about it. That's not the answer. Because as a black man, tonight when I'm driving home and I get pulled over by a racist cop and roughed up, I'm not going to go home and say, well, let's just not talk about that. No, the answer is definitely to talk about this.
Michael, what would you do?
The bad part. Hold on. I don't mean talking about, like, yes, we should talk about the bad parts of racism, but when it comes just to general conversation, when, like, oh, this is so well my black friend, it shouldn't be that. Oh, this is so well my friend. Like, are there race problems in America? Yes, I acknowledge that, but we shouldn't entail race in every single aspect of our conversation or of our daily lives. I mean, I don't even know what you look like. I didn't even know you were black. So that's the thing. It shouldn't be a main occurring conversation. It shouldn't be main occurring in the topics of a conversation.
All right.
It also shouldn't be the reason I got pulled over either, but it is every day. It also shouldn't be the reason that I have so much oppression in my life, but it is anyway. So we need to talk about it.
Michael?
Great. Darius, where are you on this conversation?
Hello, everybody. David, I'm so glad that you brought this topic up because since this law was passed, I've been questioning some of my black liberal friends. And I'm trying to get somebody to point out to me where the racism is in this bill. Now, when I ask that question, automatically I get laughter. Oh, you don't see it. It's so obvious. It's right there in your face. And so I ask, tell them what is it? And no one can point this out to me. Now, I agree with Michael 100% when Michael talks. Somebody needs to mute their phone. They got a lot of background noise. I'm sorry, I'm getting. But I agree with Michael 100% when he talks about Jim Crow laws, because that's what I felt Joe Biden should have been challenged on when he brought it up, or Barack Obama. See, Jim Crow laws were very specific. It was separate but equal. There was a separate law for blacks than there were for whites. So they had a legitimate reason to march in the protest then. They had a legitimate reason to want to tear down that system. But what you have now is in this law, with the new voting laws in Georgia, the Voter Integrity Act, there's no law that says, oh, white people can have water, but black people can't. There's no law that says black people have to have voter ID, but white people can't. Black people can vote. White people can vote by mail without their driver's license or voter registration card, but white people can. There's no laws. There aren't any laws that say that. It's only racism because somebody called it racism. And the people who call it racism are the race pimps. The people who are getting all of this money, I heard Stacey Abrams has raised over $100 million by saying that she unfairly lost the election, by saying that there's voter suppression in Georgia. People hear that and they pour money in. Black Lives Matter movement, no offense, Michael, has raised over $1 billion. Over $1 billion. Nobody knows where that money goes to, but I tell you what, they have to keep perpetuating the myth. Not saying that it doesn't happen, but to say it's institutionalized, to say that America as a whole, my brother Ron said, is racist, it's ludicrous. And Michael pointed out, he disputed his own fact by pointing out that we elected a black president. White people did. White people elected a black president. We had a black Secretary of State. We got a black DOD head. We have black we had black people to cover every spectrum of power in the United States of America. And we're still saying, oh, this country is racism, it's built on racism, and it will die on racism. Nothing is further from the truth. You will always have individuals who are racist. That's a fact. But there aren't any institutional laws that are designed to hold black people down, guys. And we need to stop doing this. Black people more than white people need to stop perpetuating this myth, because you're making our black youth feel hopeless. You're making our black youth feel like they can't accomplish anything. If the law says get a picture ID, guess what? If you want to vote, go get a darn picture ID. Nobody can stop you from doing anything that you want to do, anything that you set your mind to. in this great country of ours. And if you decide that, oh, they're not going to give me water, guess what? I'll bring my own bottle of water and stand in line, but you're not going to make me stay home. If those laws make you stay home, then guess what? You don't deserve to vote. You don't deserve the right to stand in line after our forefathers fought and died and bled for the right to vote. Someone asking you simply to mail in your driver's license number if you're going to send in a mail-in ballot. Somebody simply saying, bring food and water. You can't get it from candidates who are running for election. That makes sense, guys. Stop putting race on everything. Whatever the obstacles are, we can overcome as a people together. But if we keep pitting everything against one another and we keep calling each other racist and saying these things are racist, the only people who are going to benefit by that are the race pimps, the people who are collecting millions and millions of dollars by white people who feel guilty and white corporations who pour money into their coffers because now they can show some sort of symbolism. Oh, look, I'm not racist. I gave Black Lives Matter $10 million. Hey, if I'm Black Lives Matter, if I'm the NAACP, if I'm Stacey Abrams with Fair Fight, I'm going to keep perpetuating that myth, too, because it pays. Now, I'm asking, and this is not a rhetorical question, and I'm not being facetious, but I'm asking anybody on this line to show me any part of that law, anybody on the panel, tell me what part of that law is racism and suppresses black people from voting.
All right, Don, you want to jump in?
Darius, I think you fail to realize that America has a heart problem. It's not about color. It's about the heart, Darius. And I cannot challenge you because I sense a strong sense of denial on your part. I want to explain it to you, but I can't because of your spirit of denial that I picked up from you because it's a heart problem. It's not about...
Or maybe you can't explain it to me because it doesn't exist, Don.
I admit it.
That there's a heart problem. I admit it that there are people who are racist. I'm saying America as a whole, as a government, as a country, do not have racist policies. They do not perpetuate racism against black people. That's what I'm saying. There will always be a heart problem, Don, until Jesus comes back. I don't deny that.
Darius, I was about to explain it to you, but I was rudely interrupted. And that seems to be the problem with America today. Whenever the truth is brought to light, we get interrupted, and we're not listened to. I'm telling you right now, that move that the governor made in Georgia was racist. It was aimed at a group of people that happened to be of color. In that bill that he was signing, there was no one of color even in that room. And then there was a woman that tried to get in that was a part of the constitutional body that we have in America, the democracy. I saw policemen, white policemen, dragging her out. That was racist. Darius, open up your eyes. It's in your face.
Okay, right. Once again, I'm asking for evidence of racism, and you're saying the same thing everybody says. It's there. It's right in your face. Show me the paragraphs. Tell me what law, tell me what part of that bill discriminates against black people. I just don't know what that is, and I'm just asking you honestly. Don't just tell me it's racism. Show me. Show me where the racist part is. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, let me just point one of them out. I'll point just one of them, okay? Years ago, we know that the black church is the strongest component in the country today. The black church is where we used to meet to even start to learn how to read the Bible when we couldn't read, and then how to vote and sign up to vote. And then we progressed to souls to the polls, and it stemmed from black preachers saying, listen, you need to vote. So we got out of church and we set up souls to the polls. White people didn't have to have souls to the polls. It was black people that instituted souls to the polls.
Did you know that?
I did know that. I got one even easier than that one, Darius. Georgia has been in the union since 1778. Why today, all of a sudden, do they need to pass these specific laws for voting? Why? Because a black man in Georgia went to the United States Senate. End of conversation, period, point blank. That's why the law is racist. Because all of a sudden, we need some new laws here. Because we just sent a black man to the United States Senate from Georgia, and Georgia turned blue and went for the Democrats. That's why it's racist,
Michael.
Darius. And I got to quote Harriet Tubman one more time. Every time I hear you talk, Darius, I think about her saying she freed 1,000 slaves. She could have freed 1,000 more had they only knew they were slaves. Okay, Darius, you don't realize you're a slave, my brother, when you sit there and say our forefathers. Your forefathers and my forefathers were slaves, Darius. Our forefathers were not George Washington and the guys who founded this country. Okay? I see the floor.
Hey, Michael, I'm so glad you said that. I don't know if that was a rhetorical question, but let me answer it. The Georgia legislature didn't change that part of the law with the mail-in ballots. What they did was, this is the first time they even had an opportunity to vote on it. I don't know if you guys understand this, but Trump's entire challenge, legal challenge to the elections, were that they, because of COVID, the Secretary of State, along with certain voter rights advocates from the Democratic Party, decided that they were going to adopt mail-in balloting. And with mail-in balloting, they were going to dictate the terms of those ballots. The Secretary of State and Stacey Abrams' group, they came to a settlement in court. The Georgia legislature never even had a chance to vote on it. And so Donald Trump's entire challenge was, the laws, election laws, are made by the legislature. It's not made in court by the Secretary of State and by a judge. So it's a big myth going out, like, oh, they all of a sudden changed it because a black man got elected. That's not true. They never changed that part. They never even had a chance to vote on that part. Those laws were forced upon us because of COVID. Legislature makes voter election laws, Michael. It didn't have anything to do with race. The Georgia legislature never had a chance to intervene when they put together these vote-by-mail ballots without identification.
All right, guys, let me jump in. I want to get a young opinion. Soel, what are you listening to? What are your thoughts?
It's a variety of reasons. I mean, first, Georgia's been changing. Like, I've learned this in school. Like, Georgia's been changing for years, and not to mention the last two senators of Georgia were extremely disliked. I'm not sure which one Raphael Warnock ran against, but Kelly Loeffler was not really liked amongst most Georgians. Neither was David Perdue, so that's why both of them ran. And it was the first time in a long time where two senators were on the same ticket in the same year, so that was also a special circumstance. And it's just the way how it is. Also, with Joe Biden getting on the ticket as well, it was just a matter of circumstances, how certain things happened at the same time. And also, the governor can't just dictate things. I mean, the legislature makes these bills, and the governor decides to sign them or not. And if the overwhelming majority of the Georgia legislature passed that bill, that must mean that those people who are in those seats in the Senate, or I think it's the House or Representatives, I'm not sure which one you have, they wanted that for the constituents. Their constituents wanted it. They forwarded it. All of them voted for it, and the governor signed it. So that's just how it is, and that's just how the state governments work.
All right. Ron, where are you on this conversation? Oh, he might not be outside. Okay, Bruce, jump in.
Well, as the last couple of speakers said, we're making things about race when it doesn't have to be, it doesn't look like it. And a lot of what you said, Don, again, as far as, heart problem, this and that, you automatically imply that it's all on one side. You've always heard me say, and I respect you a lot, it's not one side, and then it's not necessarily right or left. But I can take I can take the same template that you describe and lay it right over the again, I always stress, radical far left group, not the good thinking people that believe in larger government. For me, it's always been larger or smaller government, personal freedom or being told to what to do. And our country was founded strongly on the fact of individual freedom. And if, as Darius said earlier and some of the others, you look around and see how far this country has gone. Does it need to go farther? Absolutely. Are there injustices? You betcha. And other groups are starting to feel it too. And I imagine someday it'll be all of us in our own turn. But you need to stop making everything about race. If it isn't said, if it isn't written, it is anyway. That's ludicrous. That's not right. And it will not pull people together. It will just pull them apart. So if you're if you want to solve the heart problem and bring people together, then you need to work towards doing that and use language that unites, not divides.
Bruce,
Michael would say, I yield the floor.
thank you. I'm glad you did, because I like to take the floor. Bruce, when I say a heart problem, America has a heart problem. I didn't eliminate Don. Don has a heart problem. You have a heart problem. America has a heart problem. Now, let me tell you about my heart problem. Because, see, I can speak on mine, but yours is in denial. Let me tell you about mine. I grew up in a segregated community in Michigan. I was blessed enough to go to a Catholic school. I had to put on black pants and a white shirt and walk through the ghetto, and they say, Don's going to that white school, but he's black. And then I had to change clothes and get back home to blend into the neighborhood. So I lived it, Bruce. I lived it as a kid, and I'm growing up as an adult. I'm working on becoming less racist than I was before. A lot of people were like Clarence Thomas, of climbing the affirmative action ladder and getting to the top of the ladder and then putting a match to the ladder. I've seen that, Bruce. I've seen Malcolm X. Malcolm X grew up in Lansing, Michigan. I've seen Martin Luther King in Detroit, Michigan. I've seen racism to its highest point. And now we got a heart problem. We got to talk about it. We got to deal with it and say, okay, I'm racist. How do I deal with this racism that's been in me all my life? How do I deal with it? Bruce, I can't sweep this under the rug. I can't hide it.
Don, no, I'm not asking you to. Who has a better perspective
You asked me why do I keep saying people have a heart problem. When I say we have a heart problem, I got one.
We
now
do.
You talk about
all of
your,
us.
You talk. Well, talk about yours.
Okay. All of us. You have. I have. All of us do. We have, because we have to work together to solve a basic problem that we talk about a lot. You better than anyone, a African American that has lived that. And experienced that firsthand, things I have not, and I've experienced things you have not, but I'm not drawing an equal here. I'm just saying you have. Who has a better perspective to help people learn and to teach and act than to just say, this is racism, that's racism, and almost like, you know, I'm going to scold you. That doesn't get it done. I have learned in my young life, back like you, that I treated people as they were. I think Sol said it earlier, and maybe Darius as well. I didn't judge them on their skin color. And I grew up in a integrated, went to an integrated school. And so I never saw it as something special or terrible. I saw it as a school. We were overcrowded at times, but I learned from all kinds of people. I wasn't taught to be racist. So for someone to say, you know, you're racist, as I've heard a couple of people say, I take a huge offense to that. The fact that I don't know as much about it as you do or didn't live what you live, I'll acknowledge that. But then teach me. You have a better perspective. Don't just say, you're a racist, you're this, and if I can't give you an answer, I'm going to call you racist. Ignorant card to play. Talk to me and help solve the problem. Don't just keep using the words.
Okay, I'm going to be the first to say that I agree with you on the fact that I'm one of those ones who, at first sight, I thought you were a racist. But after getting to know you and having conversations with you, I don't feel you're a racist. I just feel that you think like a racist and you don't realize you're thinking like a racist. And I'll give you an example. You started the show by saying that the problem with racism is those on the left. When everyone in the country saw four white men sign a law that's going to oppress black people similar to the Jim Crow laws, everyone in America saw that. But for some reason, you just didn't see that. Why you don't see that, Bruce, I don't know. I don't think you're purposely not seeing that. Just for some reason, you don't see that. Just like when Rodney King was getting beat by those police officers, a lot of white guys said, I don't see the problem. When every black person in America sees the problem. So I think that's the problem, Bruce, is that you're not a racist, but you play on a racist team, and you don't realize the team you're playing on is a racist team.
One small response.
You
cherry-picked. I said the radical far right that's running the left right now of a lot of good people, and I said both parties. And what did you come back with? I said it was all the left. I did not say that. I did not say that. So you can't cherry-pick. If you're going to use people's words, you need to use all of it to get the true meaning of what they're saying. That's all
okay,
I want to say.
Okay, please, guys on the panel, correct me if I'm wrong, but Bruce, you started the conversation saying the biggest problem with the division and racism is the left. That's how you started the conversation.
No, I didn't. No, I did not. Someone help me out.
He didn't say that, Michael. Okay, He did say that, guys. He didn't.
David's the moderator.
I was answering the phone. I don't know, but I do have a question for – I mean, I do want to get into Darius's comment about show him in that law where it discriminates against minorities. And so I want to say that that bill that Biden passed was specifically designed to suppress, like, working class and black voters who make up one-third of the Georgia population, and they tend to overwhelmingly vote Democrat. That's why. And it's enraging. More rigid ID requirements on their own in this law will impact black voters more harshly because according to a 2020 report on voter suppression from the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School, 25% of black voting age citizens nationally do not have a current government issued photo ID as compared to 8% of white voting age citizens. So the fact that if you pull up all these statistics, you start passing laws to stop that because it seems that since the last election, when the Georgia turned blue and mostly black women were running around trying to get people to vote and the president was calling the governor, telling him to make sure he won, this is a great outcome from all of that. So there was a reason. And if you do all the statistics and look at why, I think you'll figure out how this law will actually, in long term, hurt minority votes in the state of Georgia. All right.
It's not racist because what they did was they're saying everyone. They're not saying only white people. They're saying everybody is required. So that's my point. I'm saying if you talk about Jim Crow laws, Jim Crow laws were specific, separate but equal. You and Michael and Don, y'all keep talking about Jim Crow. Jim Crow was very specific. It wasn't no
from, or you can imagine, it was very clear. And there are no laws that specifically discriminate against black people. If you're black and you want to vote and you don't have a voter ID and you're too lazy to go and get one, because they'll give you one for free in Georgia if you want to vote. If you're too lazy to go get one, then you don't deserve to vote. And I'll say, when I said my forefathers to Michael, I was talking about our forefathers that fought in the struggle for equality. I was talking about those forefathers. And if they knew then that all that you had, that fought for the, and died for the, you to have the right to vote, and you're too darn lazy to get you an option, then you don't deserve to vote. And I'm sorry. You shouldn't be allowed to vote if you're too lazy and trifling to go and get a voter ID. I'm tired of hearing this, oh, it discriminates against blacks. No, you're sorry and you're lazy. Period. That's tough love.
Okay, serious. In this Constitution that your forefathers wrote, does it say I need a voter ID when I go vote?
I just got through telling you I wasn't talking about the forefathers of the Constitution. I was talking about our forefathers.
The Constitution says I have a right to vote. Am I correct in my thinking, yes or no?
You are correct, but guess what? The state is making
it say I need an ID,
Michael?
Yes or no?
Michael, I'm just telling you.
Does it say I need an ID in the Constitution, yes or no?
If you let me answer, I just told you. I said, no, it doesn't, but the states make election laws. The states do. And they have a right to say, we need you to be identified in order to vote. We can't just let anybody just sign and fill out a ballot and turn it in. That calls
for
fraud.
So the states override the Constitution now?
It's not an override. They're not overriding the Constitution. It's just an extra requirement. They're not changing any laws. And you should. Michael, then you're wide open. It's widespread fraud that's going to happen if you just let anybody vote. They don't have to identify themselves. That's ridiculous.
All right, gentlemen. We haven't heard from Spencer. I want to, Spencer, where are you on this conversation? Spencer. Is that Spencer? I guess he's having problems with his microphone. All right. Ron, where are you on what we're talking about now? Hello. Oh, I forgot. Ron is probably not outside.
Michael, since there's dead air space, which is rare for us, which is a good thing, Michael, what if someone walked into the polling place and said, yeah, I'm Michael, this guy right here, I'm going to give me my ballot, I'll vote, and you come in and say, well, Michael, you already voted. Go away. You can't vote twice. How would you feel? You'd feel violated, and you should. Because it's not the right thing. So this constant thing about saying that we shouldn't have ID for the most, one of the most precious things that we've fought for in this country is ludicrous. We need to make sure the person that's voting is the person they are saying they are, period.
Okay, Bruce, I'm going to ask you, Mr. All-American, in your, the Constitution, does it say I need an ID to vote?
No, it didn't. That's already
okay,
been
okay, so end of conversation, right? End of conversation. Literally,
no,
in the conversation.
It's a conversation. No, it is not. It is not. It's only the beginning.
Bruce, if you guys will hold on 1 second,
yes.
I have a call. I would like to join.
All right, okay.
Sir, what were your comments, sir?
Wow. That's all I can say. Good evening, gentlemen. my name is Wayne. I've been listening to you guys for the past couple of weeks. And may I offer a few things, because I heard a lot of issues and perspectives going on, and so I want to sort of address quickly the first one. I heard this tone of racism and acts of racism, et cetera. I would suggest that maybe this panel would do some research. For instance, there's a book that I'm reading, White Fragility, by Robin DiAngelo. I don't know if you all are aware of it, but she happens to be an educated white educator who actually did some really good work and research in this whole concept and the reason why it's so hard to discuss it. And just to sort of give a high-level view in the short term is that, you know, we're all exposed to something called implicit bias, and our prejudices are regulated by culturally and functionally by our surroundings and what we take in. For instance, if I was to say, you know, a police officer would be at your door in a minute, you would assume it's a male because that's kind of what we've seen in our lifetime. If I said, hey, a nurse will attend to you, we may assume that it's a woman. And a lot of that is it relates to how we interpret our perspectives, and it affects our prejudices. And what happens is when these things that affect, and in a lot of ways, I believe a lot of people, including blacks, are implicitly biased, obviously because of culturally the things we've been exposed to. However, we start to get to the core of why people who have this implicit bias, who may have some type of institutional control that actually falls over a lot of people, then it dictates what type of rules and policies are in place, and it becomes this issue of, if you want to use the term, racism. And a lot of times, maybe we really don't even know. So I would suggest that as a reading, and maybe have some very, you know, good discussion about it before we get into these convoluted issues about what's race and what's not. I do want to correct, and I had discussion regarding the Constitution, and if anyone want to take the time and look at Section 1, Article 4 of the Constitution, it talks about Section 1, Article 4, and this is a slippery slope. You know, it does talk about the federal government has the ability to institute laws that can supersede state laws as it relates to elections. And I'm not sure if that's the route we want to go. I think that's part of the contention with this whole issue of filibustering. I don't know if that's the route we want to go. You know, states have been empowered to do so. And, yes, there have been sweeping changes in Georgia. And I think the discussion that I know initially I had was, well, let's look at the intent and then maybe look at each issue. But I think we need to have a clear lens before we start, again, vilifying people because they have differences of opinion. Gentlemen, you guys are astute men, and I really love listening to your conversations. But when the volatility kicks in, it really sort of takes away from the objective of this panel. So those are my two suggestions. I'm not really here to comment on specifically what people are saying. I think that if we educate ourselves and come together more, I think the objective is that we learn to work together, right, in spite of our, you know, our perspectives, and learn to agree to disagree and allow the system to work. I mean, we live in America. It may not be a perfect system, but it's the best thing going. I, for one, I like counterbalance. I think when you tug left, you turn right, eventually end up somewhere in the middle. You're never going to make everyone happy. So let's let the system play out. And it is based on how people vote, right, and certain policies that may dictate a change. I mean, it's happened throughout this whole existence, United States. So that's my comment, gentlemen. I hope we can be more constructive, and let's make some things happen. Let's have some good discussions and talk. I'm done. Thank you.
Keep listening to us, Wayne.
Thank you.
Keep listening to us.
So,
all right. Well, let me ask a question. Let me change this conversation a little bit because there is something coming up that the president is contemplating. I'm going to ask each member of the panel, do you feel that marijuana should be legalized for use, creative use for use?
Creative use?
Well,
what's that mean?
Not creative use, for
recreational?
Use. Recreational
use?
Thank you.
Okay.
Marijuana should be illegal for recreational use. Okay, Bruce, you were up. What do you think?
It's legal in my state, Michigan. Recreational is. And what I have found, there are – so short answer is I've never touched the stuff and probably never will unless I need it for municipal purposes. I don't think anybody disagrees with that aspect, but on the recreational side, my state's in it up to its eyeballs now. But what I've noticed in our state, gentlemen, is different counties, different cities, different authoritative agencies are handling it different. So it's here, it's a permission. It's not a mandate. And if you don't want it in your community, you can keep it out. So it's back to local rule and lower than the state. So I guess I kind of like that. But if you're asking me how I feel about it, I have no use for it recreationally, but I'm not going to stand in the way of people that I guess want to use it. I'm just a little nervous.
But you're saying state, and I'm saying the federal government is going to mandate it recreational use nationally. So that would supersede the states in all ways. Okay, so
well,
Don,
can I add one more thing? If they mandate national rule on how that's done, that's a problem.
Thank you, David. Thank you, David. I'd like
hello, Don.
Well, David, until Don comes back, I'll take it. This kill is dead air.
Okay.
I live in California, which
I'm
is
here.
The marijuana state. Okay,
hey,
sorry, go ahead.
Please let me go, and then we'll be very short.
I
want to give you two perspectives. First of all, I didn't realize what God said when he said, when I made plants, everything was good. God made marijuana. It was good when it was introduced to earth. But the thing is, guys like me used it to get high, and it led to other controlled substance. And it made a mess out of my life for a short period of time until I was able to recover and get help that I needed. Now, if marijuana is a use to help people and heal sicknesses, many sicknesses. The medical community said marijuana helps people. I'm going to go for it, but I don't have to use it. I can't use it because it will lead to other controlled substances because I have an addicted personality. But nationally, if they okay it, I'm going to go with it. What they do is what they do. I don't have to bend my elbow anymore.
Right. To me, that's like liquor, you know, prohibition. Anyway, Soel, what are your thoughts? Should marijuana be legalized nationally?
It's legal in Nevada, and personally, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like marijuana. I mean, I have friends and family that use it recreationally, and I know people that need it for medical purposes. And so long as it's done in a safe way, I really don't care because it hasn't affected me at all. The crime rate in our state's actually gone down because people are common using cannabis, and people that were using it illegally and selling it illegally, they now got pardons on their criminal records, and the people who were selling it illegally, they can't do it anymore, so now they're out of business, and it's away problems if you just let people have it. Like prohibition. Prohibition didn't work. And if you just make it legal, it's just going to make all of these problems go away.
Right. All right. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I definitely think the federal government needs to legalize it because to draw the parallel like everyone is doing to alcohol, yes, alcohol kills people. Drunk drivers kill people every day. No one's ever gotten high and had a car wreck and killed anybody. Marijuana does not cause the number of deaths that alcohol causes, but yet alcohol is legal and we accept that. There's a liquor store in every corner in my community, and that's okay. So the fact that if you want to ban a substance, ban alcohol, and yes, definitely make marijuana legal. You know, the argument that marijuana is a gateway drug, meaning it leads to other things, that's so not true. When I meet guys who are smoking crack and they say this marijuana led to this crack, I'm like, no, dude, you're going to just get on crack anyway. Don't blame it on the marijuana. Marijuana
right,
is
me,
not a gateway. People who say that are just going to go to the harder drugs anyway. So it is
right.
Not. I know tons of people that have smoked marijuana
okay,
for years and they never went to any of it.
All right, come on, Darius, what are your thoughts?
Hey, I'm with, I think Bruce said earlier, you know, I say to each his own. I think each state and down to each municipality should be able to make their own decision if they want it sold in their neighborhood, just like they can decide if they want a strip club, liquor store, you know, whatever in their neighborhoods. It should be left up to those people if they want that in their neighborhoods.
So you don't think the president should make it a national?
I don't think anything. I believe in less federalism than anything, you know. I believe in states' rights for the most part.
All right, so thank you for listening to The Man's Voice. We won't be back next weekend because that's Easter Sunday and we don't do holidays, or at least the gentlemen going to be with their families. We appreciate all the panelists, and thanks for calling. Thanks, Soel, for coming back from Las Vegas and joining us. And I hope that Ron gets a better phone. All right, guys, have a great week.
Yeah.
God bless
you
all,
too,
guys. Have a great week.
Good to have
Happy
you back,
Easter.
David.
Bye.
Take care, guys.